You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with computer scientist Stephen Wolfram, founder and CEO of Wolfram Research, the creator of Mathematica, and Wolfram Alpha. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I've been fortunate to be able to sort of alternate between doing basic science and building technological tools so far about five times in my life. That's sort of an interesting thing because you build up kind of intellectual ideas in basic science, then you apply them in technology, then that technology lets you come up with new ideas in basic science, a cycle that can continue. But in terms of my own trajectory, I got interested in physics when I was pretty young, maybe 10, 11, 12 years old, and started studying it intently, discovered this amazing thing that you can just read books and figure things out. It was a time when physics was in a very energetic phase, the mid-1970s. Lots of things were being discovered in physics. I had the chance to turn computers in the direction of the computational universe and see what was out there. What I discovered was a lot of things I certainly didn't expect. In particular, that even when you had a very simple program, very simple setup for the computer, the actual behavior of the program, the actual patterns that you generated could be very complicated. And I realized that's something that seems to be the secret that nature is using to make all this complexity that we see. And so that got me very excited about applying the idea of computation to things like basic science. And somehow, in the middle of all of that, knowing more about the essence of computation let me understand more about how one could build tools based on computation to work with the things in the world. My mother was a philosophy professor in Oxford. And when I was a kid, I would always say, if there's one thing I'll never do when I'm grown up, it's philosophy, because how can one be serious about a field where people are still arguing about the same things that they were arguing about 2,000 years ago, and there's no kind of apparent progress? But actually, the exciting thing has been that both in my work in building computational language and in my work in understanding sort of the computational foundations of physics, that it turns out that a bunch of those things that people have been arguing about for a couple of thousand years, we can actually say some real things about. It has been a long time trend in philosophy that sort of things start in philosophy and eventually turn into science and turn into things where you can make conclusions. And it's exciting for me that having observed these things that had been just points of discussion for a very long time, to my surprise, the things that I've discovered scientifically, have allowed one to actually get insight into those questions that have been around for a long time. For example, in modern times, it's popular to talk about artificial intelligence has been a term that's been around since the mid-1950s, and it's gone through a variety of different kinds of meanings and popularities. And in fact, much of what I've done in building computational language, computational tools, can be thought of as related to at least an earlier version of what people thought artificial intelligence was and would be, so to speak. But I think in modern times, the real point is it's about letting computers automate more things for us. There are a particular twist on kind of the notion of artificial intelligence that has to do with tasks that are very human-like tasks, like generating human language and so on, that have only recently become really accessible to computation. And as we go to the future, we can expect to see more and more things in the world get automated. If we look across human history, many things are just the same now as they ever were. And the way the human condition is, the way people are, has really been very much the same for a very long time. But the one thing that's changed in the course of human history is the development of technology and the increasing automation with which we can do things. And I think that's something we can expect will continue. And then what automation does is it shines a sort of brighter light on the question of, so what do you actually want to do? What is the thing that you as the human are determining the direction things should go in? Once you've determined that direction, the automation can come in and the giant industrial machine can progress in that direction. But the question, it's the AI, the computational system, whatever, it has no built-in sense of what it should do. There are an infinite set of possibilities. There's something we learn from my efforts in studying the computational universe is there's a lot out there. Most of it are things that we humans, at least so far, have not cared about. And the story of development of things tends to be, what do humans decide that they care about? In what direction do they want to go? What kind of art do they want to make? What kinds of things do they want to think about? What kinds of objects do they want to produce? There's an infinite collection of possibilities, but it's something that's a matter of kind of the human choice is which of these infinite things do we actually choose to pursue? And then our AIs, our computational systems can help us to be as effective as possible in pursuing those directions. But I think as there is more automation, there is more emphasis on this question of our choice. And in a sense, there is, in the computational universe of all possibilities, there is infinite creativity. But our challenge is to decide in which direction we want to go, and then to let our automated systems pursue those particular directions. The question is, how can you formalize what has to be done in a way that can be thought about computationally? You have some company, for example, it has all kinds of things that are going on, transactions that it's doing, products that it has, all these kinds of things. What is a computational or symbolic representation of those things that formalizes structure in such a way that we can compute with it? That's the typical path. And the consequence of that is, it's like before, it was like roughly we know what's going to happen and this and that and the other. It's roughly this or that. And what we get to is something much more formalized where we can say, yes, this is something we can automatically figure out. It will take a computer a fraction of a second to work it out. And then we can go on to the next thing. And that's the repeated story is once you can think about something computationally, formalize it computationally, then it becomes this thing that you can automate, this kind of brick for a tower that you can build. When you're just talking about it in, I've got words to describe this and so on, then it's something where you can't build on it. Once you have it formalized, then you can put it in as this kind of brick to build this whole tower of whatever you want to do. And I think one of the things that's been a limiting thing for progress in these directions is who understands how to think computationally about things. What I've spent a large part of my life doing is trying to provide the language in which people can think computationally about things. But there's still a human effort in being able to formulate what one's thinking about in these kind of computational terms. It's like one might say in an earlier age, can you think logically about that? You know, it's a funny thing because I've spent my life sort of building this big tower of science and technology. And every so often, something comes out of that tower that people say, this is a cool thing. For me, the whole tower is the thing that's really important. Certainly the most significant thing I've been able to do. And it's something that I've been able to see now over the course of half a century or so, how various ideas I've had and directions I've gone have actually played out. ChatGPT is something that was not of my creation, that I didn't really expect was going to happen at any particular time, was being able to get an AI neural network system to be a fluent producer of human language. And that happened in late 2022 with ChatGPT. Nobody, including people who worked on it, really expected this to work. It's something that we just didn't know scientifically what it would take to make something that was a fluent producer of human language. I think the big discovery is that this thing that has been a proud achievement of our species, human language, is perhaps not as complicated as we thought it was. It's something that is more accessible to simpler automation than we expected. People have been asking me when ChatGPT had come out. We were doing a bunch of things technologically around ChatGPT because when ChatGPT is stringing words together to make sentences, there's what does it do when it has to actually solve a computational problem? That's not what it does itself. It's a thing for stringing words together to make text. And so how does it solve a computational problem? Like humans, the best way for it to do it is to use tools. And the best tool for many kinds of computational problems are tools that we've built. And so very early in kind of the story of ChatGPT and so on, we were figuring out how to have it be able to use the tools that we've built, just like humans can use the tools that we've built to solve computational problems, to actually get accurate knowledge about the world and so on. The thing to say about that is there are all these different kind of nerve firings in our brains and so on, but we managed to somehow package up those things into language. We managed to take those neuron firings and create out of those things concepts that we can express in words that we can communicate to other human minds who can unpack them again and turn them into their particular neuron firings and all those sorts of things. And so a thing that I didn't think we would ever have anything scientific to say about is a question like, why does the universe exist? But that's something that now we can make some scientific statements about that. And those statements have a lot of resonance, I think, with things that people have come to from very different kinds of ways of thinking about the world. I think one very big example of that is this phenomenon of computational irreducibility, this idea that even though you know the rules by which something operates, that doesn't immediately tell you everything about what the system will do. You might have to follow a billion steps in the actual operation of those rules to find out what the system does. There's no way to jump ahead and just say, and the answer will be such and such. Computational irreducibility is, in a sense, goes against the hope, at least, of, for example, mathematical science. A lot of the hope of mathematical science is we'll just work out a formula for how something is going to operate. We don't have to go through the steps and watch it operate. We can just jump to the end and apply the formula. Computational irreducibility says that isn't something you can generally do. It says that there are plenty of things in the world which are where you have to go through the steps to see what will happen. In a sense, even though that's a bad thing for science, it says that there's limitations on the extent to which we can use science to predict things. It's a good thing, I think, for leading one's life, because it means that as we experience the passage of time, in a sense, that corresponds to the sort of irreducible computation of what we will do. It's something where that tells one that the passage of time has a meaningful effect. There's something that where you can't just jump to the end and say, I don't need to live all the years of my life. I can just go and say, and the result will be such and such. No, actually, there's something irreducible about that actual progression of time and the actual living of those years of life, so to speak. So that's kind of one of the sort of an enriching aspect of this concept of computational irreducibility. It's a pretty important concept. It's something which I think, for example, in the future of human society, will be something where people right now will think of it as this kind of geeky scientific idea, but in the future, it's going to be a pivotal thing for the understanding of how one should conduct the future of human society.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.